Are you an overwhelmed entrepreneur with endless tasks, emails, and messages? Do you feel your systems are ineffective or you don't have any at all? I get it. You wish you could come up for air and take that well-deserved vacation you've been dreaming of, all without sacrificing the growth or health of your business. I'm hosting a webinar to introduce concepts that you can use to learn more about how to clockwork your business for operational efficiency. The best part? The webinar is at no cost to you. It will be held May 14th at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, and a recording will be available for those who can't attend live. If you are ready to make a change in your business so you can take a real vacation, go to bit.ly/May2024CFF to enroll. That's bit.ly/May2024CFF. I can't wait to see you there.
Welcome to Biz Help for You with host Candy Messer. Entrepreneurs like to focus on the big picture, like profitability, success, and a smooth running organization. There always seems to be those little things like taxes, employee compensation, laws, regulations, and more. Now, you can get the answers you need in one place. Join us today as we break it all down for you. Now, here is your host, Candy Messer.
Hello, and welcome to Biz Help for You with Candy Messer. Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found the information on last week's show, PPP Forgiveness Application Facts, the informative. If you are unable to join us and would like to listen to the show, a link can be found on my YouTube and Facebook pages, as well as iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. If there are topics you'd find beneficial or questions you have, please feel free to reach out to me at media@abandp.com. Now let's learn a little bit about our guest today. Jeremy Harbor is a serial investor and expert in mergers and acquisitions. As the founder of Unity Group, he's advised on more than 300 acquisitions of both distressed and solvent businesses. Jeremy speaks worldwide on the 14 acquisition deal structures that allow you to buy and sell businesses, something particularly important for entrepreneurs to hear at this time. His commentary has been featured in the UK in the Sunday Times, Financial Times, the Money Channel, and he's been invited to Buckingham Palace and the British Houses of Parliament to advise on matters of business and enterprise. So, Jeremy, welcome to our show today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, I wanted to start out by having you explain a little bit more about yourself and how you got into doing this business.
Yeah, I think most people who end up in mergers and acquisitions come through the kind of corporate finance or investment banking kind of route, and that wasn't me at all. So I kind of came at this from an entrepreneurial perspective, and you know, I did a number of startups when I was young, and most of them failed. But I started a telecoms company that did relatively well, and as such, I had lots of other telecoms companies trying to buy me. This was the 1990s. Telecoms was very fragmented. There were lots of small players, and of course, it was it's easier to go out and buy a small telco than it is to go and acquire the customers to grow. And so, consequently, people were running around trying to buy me. And what I realized is that most of them were presenting deal structures that didn't have any cash for me. Or not straight away anyway, it would be kind of some jam tomorrow sort of structure. And I just figured, well, look, I haven't got any money. Maybe I should be the buyer instead of the seller. You know, maybe I should be on the other side of the table. And that's pretty much what I did. And I was in my early 20s. I was completely green. I didn't know what I was doing. And I just went around pitching other telecoms companies. And I was just very lucky. Well, I put myself in luck's way, let's put it that way, and found a 13-year-old mobile phone business that had about 1,000 active customers, which was about what we would connect in a year. So that's like a year's worth of customers. And he had loads of motivations. The building was about to be demolished and he had to move buildings and that was going to cost him a load of money. And a number of other factors that all kind of came to create sort of a perfect storm that he needed to take action and he needed to do something quite quick. So I was able to put a transaction together that didn't involve any cash up front from my part, but grew my business by a year's worth of sales in an afternoon, effectively. Wow. And I couldn't even afford a lawyer. I did the legals myself. It was like the most basic deal you can ever imagine, but it was a complete epiphany because up until that point, I always felt the only way to grow was sales, marketing, all those traditional routes. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like I had a peek behind a curtain and found a whole new way to scale a business and one that didn't involve the risk of, marketing campaigns that may or may not work but cost lots of money. So that was a real epiphany for me, and that was really how I got started. I figured out, you don't have to run the marathon, you can just run the last 10 yards and you still get a medal.
Well, that sounds a little bit dangerous when you said you even did the own legal information yourself, because of course we always hear go to an attorney, have it all spelled out,
Yeah, although contract law is actually relatively simple. I used to go to all these networking meetings, those breakfast meetings where everybody stands up for a minute. They're probably not allowed at the moment with this COVID thing, or they've all gone online or something. But I used to go to lots of those because as a telecoms business, everybody uses telephones, so everyone's a kind of potential customer. So it was quite a good source of business for me. And so, when I was trying to figure out how to do this, anytime there was an accountant, a CPA or a lawyer in the room, and there invariably would be one, I'd kind of pin them in a corner and literally say, like, how do you buy a business? No, I mean, literally, how do you buy it? What are the, how do you prove you own the shares? How do you document that? How does it all work? And actually what you realize is that although they put a lot of confusing language and stuff around it, the essence of contract law is remarkably simple. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be too scared of it, particularly the reason you want to go all out on advisors is to protect your capital. You don't want to lose a load of money, but if you're not committing capital in the first place, then the risk is much lower. So mm-hmm. if you can mitigate the risks in other ways, so using limited liability companies to do the acquisition, so it's not you personally doing it, and reduce the capital exposure at the beginning, I think there's lots of risk mitigating things that you can do that can save you a lot of time and trouble.
Right. Well, I would love for you to start talking about then how you evolved your current business model, really, from focusing on maybe some of the larger businesses to even the small, because I know you've got small to medium sized companies that you've been working with as well, who are my audience. So I'd love you to just talk about, how your focus is on them too, because I know you've also done some larger companies too.
Yeah. So look, the there's a few things here. So small to medium sized businesses get the raw end of the deal in every way, shape and form. They get, they get more attention from the tax man than a large company would, because they can't afford to defend themselves. They get crappy deals from banks and credit card processing companies. They get, they're below the radar of any of the decent investors out there. So they have to deal with, angel investors and other, sources of finance, which aren't as efficient or as good as large companies have the benefit of. So they really do get the raw end of the stick. And actually, everything I've ever done in my career has been aimed at small to medium sized businesses. Having always been one myself, I've always thought that was a gap in the market everybody mm-hmm. ignored. And there's a few things that I kind of work with. The first one is empowering entrepreneurs to build their business through acquisition, to get some scale much quicker. The other one is to look at exiting, to actually sell your business and create capital, because I don't believe you really make money running businesses. You make money when you sell them. You create capital events, which really create your wealth. A lot of people start businesses because they want time and financial freedom, and then it takes away all their time and all their money.
Right.
So
exactly.
They end up with neither. So I try and help people understand that and how they can actually create wealth through business rather than just creating a kind of prison for themselves. Mm-hmm. And then the final one is looking at how you create groups of companies. So a lot of value creation, a lot of shareholder value comes from scale. As soon as you're big, you get access to better capital, you get access to bigger clients, scale. You kind of have to be big to get big. And so, another thing that we really focus on is roll-up strategies and consolidation strategies. So putting multiple businesses together. And that's either through mergers or through using public companies, so going public and then rolling lots of other companies into it. But yeah, really thinking in those terms, thinking more in terms of shareholder value rather than just always the kind of customer value and sales and marketing stuff that I think is you know, what most people spend their time on.
Perfect. And I know we'll probably dive deeper into even some of those things you just mentioned. But I would love for you then to tell us how you went from $1 million in revenue to $13.5 million and 15 staff to 135 staff in just 18 months.
Yeah, that was really after doing that first deal. So the telecoms company I had $1 million in revenue. I bought that little mobile phone shop I just mentioned, you know, the year's worth of revenue in an afternoon. Mm-hmm. And then what was really funny was it was kind of like a light switch came on. And all of a sudden I realized that this was possible. I actually did my next deal 2 weeks later.
Wow.
So literally 2 weeks after that first deal, I did the next one. And it walked into my office. It was somebody that came for a job interview who happened to have a small IT business that they were going to close down. And we bought this IT business from him, again, without using any money up front. And what's interesting is I don't think I would have spotted that as an opportunity at a future point, because I'd just done this first deal and I was, you know, I was like a dog with a bone. I was looking for the next one. I was like so keen to find the next opportunity. That I started to see opportunities everywhere. It was kind of like I was looking through a new pair of spectacles and there was deals everywhere through there. So yeah, very simply, I bought that company and then I went to an awards ceremony, you know, one of these black tie dinner type things. And there was a guy that had a call center business, and through conversation, I found out he had some trouble with the tax man. And we were able to structure a deal to buy that business. And then there was another IT company that I bought, which again, he was really looking for an opportunity to scale the business. So I merged it with my IT company, and just basically these opportunities just started coming up. At this point in time, I hadn't really figured out a way of, you know, consistently marketing to find opportunities. I'd gone to business brokers, but business brokers were all pretty useless. I mean, they would give you overpriced businesses that either weren't really for sale or wanted so much money for their business that it was, you know, it was just not going to be possible. Plus, they were all expecting somebody just to rock up and give them a check one day. They didn't understand that, you know, there might be some kind of deal structure involved. So I always found brokers a complete waste of time. They made me a busy fool in terms of analyzing stuff, but not really making much progress. So at this point, all I was doing was those same networking meetings. But you know what was really interesting is I'd go to the networking meetings, and instead of standing up trying to flog everybody telephones, because that's what I used to do before, and how irritating is it when you meet people that just try and sell you stuff the whole time? You know, it's like it doesn't make for good networking. Well, now I'm standing up and saying I buy companies and I'm an investor, and I, you know, I'm looking for companies that either want to grow or have problems that need solving or whatever. Now, all of a sudden, I got everybody's business card. I got everybody interested because I wasn't really a threat to them anymore. And what one thing I really noticed was I would often say back then, I don't say this anymore, but back then I would often say, you know, I invest in companies that have some kind of problem. You know, maybe they've got tax problems or they owe money to people and they can't pay it. You know, I look at special situations, and invariably somebody would come up to me afterwards and go, oh, well, you know, we don't have any of those problems, but we could always do with a bit more money. And then you'd look at them and they have all of those problems.
They don't want to admit it.
Exactly. It was kind of like, I used to describe it as like, I felt like a crack dealer and they were the crack addicts. You know, these people that just like, they were desperate for cash to try and I always describe the you know, what they were trying to do is effectively fill their leaking bucket with more water. You know, so they had a leaking bucket. They had a business that they didn't get the fundamentals right. You know, the fundamentals of business are you've got to have more money coming in than going out, right? So they'd lost sight of that fundamental thing, and they were expecting me to come and solve it by pouring my hard-earned money into this, you know, leaking bucket. And so when you point out to them that it doesn't really need the money, it needs the bucket to stop leaking, you know, you'd often get resistance, but ultimately that was the solution. So you could do that deal without needing the cash. You just need to go in and help them, you know, fix it all.
Right. So what advice do you have for small business owners looking for these type of deals, even now during these challenging times?
Yeah, well, look, it's a real buyer's market. There are tons and tons of opportunities out there, but I wouldn't go looking for businesses for sale. I would just approach business owners who are in the sector that you're interested in and start a conversation with them on a nothing ventured, nothing gained sort of basis, because you'll be amazed at the percentage of them that are willing to engage in some sort of conversation. So, for example, if you approach 100 companies with, say, a letter or an email or a LinkedIn request, you'll get somewhere between 5 and 10 of those that will engage in a conversation, and probably 1 in 20 of those that will actually want to do something, you know, quite proactively. So it's a quite a big percentage of businesses out there that you can engage with. So I don't think you need to spend time with brokers and all of that sort of stuff. But the other thing is to try and understand what to do, because sourcing the deal is only a small part of the of the overall picture. Because remember, this is people's livelihoods that you're playing with. You know, there's employees and everything there. So you kind of need to know what you're doing. I always describe it as like, you know, the dog chasing the car. What do you do when you catch the car? You need to have a strategy next. Right. So I would just take the time to educate yourself around this subject. Now, the challenge with that is that most of the information out in the big wide world is designed for kind of corporate takeovers. Mm-hmm. So it's the kind of MBA student, how to buy a business. And then a lot of the books written about buying businesses are written by advisors. So advisors just say, get loads of advisors, of course, because it's basically a sales pitch for their services. And then if you read the kind of websites on it, they're often written by brokers who are using it to try and attract new customers. So it's actually quite hard to disseminate real advice on how to, you know, do deals, put deals together, find companies. You know, there's quite a bit of YouTube content out there. Some of it's good, some of it's terrible. there's all sorts of sources. But learning this stuff, I think, is a really important thing for an entrepreneur, because it's kind of like another rung on the entrepreneurial ladder that you may never have considered.
Mm-hmm. So what are the advantages then of doing deals with the small businesses versus the large businesses?
Everyone has different descriptions of what a small and a large business are. Right. So I focus, my core focus is businesses that do between 1 and 10 million of annual profit. So they're the deals that I work on. But I cut my teeth. I did most of my career, you know, I've done that for the last 4 years. The 16 years before that, my target market was sub 5 million of revenue. And typically companies doing kind of 1.5 million of revenue. So very small businesses. Now, what I learned was that basically if they're doing less than 500 grand a year, it's not really a business. It's a consultancy, or it's a one man band. It's, you know, it tends to be very one customer centric, or very one person centric. So there's not really a business there that you can get any kind of continuity from. So you do need to kind of get at least above 500,000, ideally above 1 million of revenue before they start to have, you know, staff members in charge of specific areas of the business instead of one person that does everything. So, you know, 1 million plus is kind of a necessity in terms of a target market. There's no shortage of them. There are literally millions and millions of these businesses out there. Mm-hmm.
And then when you're going to be looking to create these deal structures, how do you do that with no cash? You mentioned earlier, you know, you didn't have cash, so you went to look and buy a business. Like, how would you do that?
Yeah, so look, with that particular one, it was a distressed business. So it was all about ascertaining what the itch is and then scratching it. So it's kind of like a sales process. You know, what are your challenges? How can I solve them? And, you know, getting the business out the other side of it. But we, you know, on the Harbor Club, which is our community of deal makers, we have 15 different structures on how you can put these deals together without using cash up front. And that's everything from distressed type deals right the way through to those 1 to 10 million of annual profit type deals. So it really depends. You know, there's no one size fits all solution. It's around identifying what their challenges are and how you're going to how you're going to solve those with your deal structure. So lots of different ways you can do it. But look, there's a really common one that's working really well at the moment because of the pandemic. We call it the WIBO, the work in buy out. And very simply, the concept is if you approached a business, perhaps it's a baby boomer business that's been going for 30, 40 years, doing 5 million of revenue, $500,000 of profit. There's not a big queue of natural buyers for that business, but they also would like to retain their legacy, and they don't really want to close it down and sack everybody that's been very loyal to them. Right. Now, if you approach that business and you said to the guy, I'm going to give you $2 million for your business, but I'm going to pay you over the next 5 years from the cash flow of the business, they'd probably go, I don't know who the hell you are. You might never pay me. How about no, you know, is the most likely outcome to that conversation. However, if you approached them and you said, hey, look, I would love to own this business over time, but I've noticed this about the way you acquire customers on your website, for example, and I've noticed a few other things that I think you could do very quickly that would add an awful lot of value to the business. How about I come in and do that on a consulting basis? And if I can achieve X result, you give me a 10% equity stake in the business. And I will then also, as your 10% shareholder, help you sell the business for, you know, a $2 million price over time. And then you go in, it's called working buyout. So you go and do some work, you get the equity kicker for your work. You can charge a consulting fee while you're in there, but you get the equity kicker for your work. And then you're a shareholder, you're a trusted party, you've delivered on what you said you were going to deliver. You can say, right, we can go out and sell this now, or I could buy it from you. And I could pay you over 5 years.
That kind of makes sense.
Okay, let's do it. And that doesn't need to be a really long, drawn out process either. That can be achieved in, you know, a relatively short space of time. But it's kind of like, do a risk reverse, money where your mouth is type solution for them, and then try and buy the rest out. And that's one of the strategies out of the 15 that's working quite well now, because there's lots of businesses that maybe didn't react to COVID and have found themselves in a bit of a pickle, but they have great opportunity to bounce back in the future, but they've got an owner that's got their head in the sand a little bit. So just saying to them, look, I'll come in and do some of the heavy lifting and deal with some of the crap, and you give me a share, for helping you. And then, later on, we can look at something a bit bigger.
Yeah, I would definitely think now would be a good time then too, because I mean, like you said, COVID has definitely had an impact on people, but even those who maybe were getting a little bit older and thinking of retirement in the next, 3 to 5 years or something, might be thinking now like, oh, I'm not going to be able to because I have to build my business up again.
Yeah, it's accelerated all of those conversations and made people really think about it. And also remember, baby boomers have been through several economic cycles. They remember the global financial crisis. They remember the dot-com crash. And they know that this is the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. They know how the movie ends. And, if you look at the 2008 financial crisis, the recession was in 2011, and it didn't really wash out until maybe a couple of years after that. Well, if you're in your 70s and you're thinking, do I want to do this for another 5 years? Go through, there's bound to be at the moment that the economy is jacked up on stimulus, there's bound to be some fallout still to come, and they're not stupid. They can see that. So doing a deal now, might actually serve them better than it's kind of now or in 5 years, I'd rather spend those 4 years living some life than, trudging through another recession.
Right. So I know you were talking about, these businesses that you can look around and find, right? And obviously we would feel more comfortable in our own industry, but what are the types of businesses people should be looking for? I mean, should they expand outside of their exact industry they're currently in, or should they stay in one that they feel more comfortable in because they've been doing it for a long time?
It's a very good question. So, and one I get asked all the time, because when people look at my background, they see all the different businesses that I've been involved in. I've, owned a music school and a IT company and a telecoms company and a just every air conditioning business, a cleaning company, every kind of business you can imagine I've probably been involved in. And so people see that kind of that sector agnostic approach and think that might be a good idea for them, or it'd be be really interesting for them. I kind of did it a little bit by accident in the beginning, and that's then served me in the future, that people trust that I can do a deal with them because I have that experience. But one of the things I always recommend to newbies is the most important thing is for you to get your first deal done. And I call it breaking your deal virginity, because you can basically read books about this, you can do courses, you can do whatever you like, but nothing prepares you for the real thing, So you've got to go and get the experience of actually having done your first deal. And then when you've done your first deal, it's the absolute catalyst to every other deal that you'll do after that, because suddenly your confidence goes up. your own self-belief, you know, is improved. You'll find yourself subconsciously referencing the deal you did last time and using it as a reference for the next one. It just opens the doors to getting loads more deals done. So my advice is always you want to take the most expedient route possible to getting that first deal done. And so if you want to take the most expedient route, you want to remove all of the obstacles that sit between you and that first deal. And one of those obstacles might be your ability to create kind of rapport and empathy with the business owner who's selling. And, you know, one of the quickest ways to build rapport and empathy is through similarities. And so if you understand their industry, you can reference people they might know in the industry or quirks in that particular industry. That does a huge amount to quickly build rapport and empathy. And that will really help get the deal done. So I would say for a first deal, maybe stick to the knitting. Focus on the industry that you have some understanding of. And then once you've got that deal done, then maybe if you absolutely hate your industry and that's why you want to do deals, maybe do that first one to get the confidence up and then branch out into, you know, other areas where, you know, get a more sector agnostic approach. But yeah, I would say just from a simplicity perspective, your own industry to begin with works really well. The second part of your question, which is what industries are good for this at the moment, blue collar baby boomer businesses for no money down acquisition are there's tons of them, just tons and tons and tons of those kind of blue collar things. And for the roll-up strategies, the fragmented industries, actually white collar business to business stuff, marketing agencies, you know, even things like architects offices and professional type businesses as well, can work really, really well. They often tend to be in fragmented industries, lots of small players, easy to put a group of them together. So both those areas are very rich with deal opportunities at the moment.
Perfect. Well, earlier you were talking about, you know, public companies and the value for shareholders. So can a small business go public?
Absolutely, yeah. The scale isn't generally one of the restricting factors. Obviously, cost and the time investment you have to make in being a public company is often a barrier. But what we've created one of the deal structures we have in the Harbour Club is something called agglomeration. An agglomeration is effectively a governance structure that allows small companies to go public under a sort of umbrella company. So they still retain autonomy over their own business, but they get a lot of the benefits of being a public company, like liquid shares, big balance sheet and P&L of a global, fully reporting public company, so they can go and pitch for bigger contracts, attract better talent, all of those kind of things. And that's been relatively successful. We listed that company it's about 2 years ago now. And last year, it was the third fastest growing small cap company in the whole of Europe. It's got 20, I think it's 20 or 21 subsidiaries in it. So 20 companies that have come and joined that group, and it's been growing at the rate of about a company a month since it's launched. So it's a great structure for small to medium sized businesses. It, like I say, it unlocks liquidity, access to clients, and access to talent.
Mm-hmm. So you started talking right now, just even in that last sentence, about a few advantages, but there are any other advantages to going public for the small business that you didn't mention yet?
Yeah, so possibly. I mean, like, credibility is a great one. Credibility with clients, credibility with staff, credibility, you know, if you've got a product that's particularly complex or difficult, mm-hmm. like you're selling franchises, for example, being a public company can give people the confidence to buy your product. There's a number of advantages, but they're probably the main ones.
Okay. So we obviously know now is a little bit crazy time. And I know you're talking about, this is, you know, a time where there's some distressed businesses to find and things like that, but is it really the best time to be thinking of deals considering the continued risk?
So again, there's ways to protect yourself from risk. So, the biggest risk you can take is investing tons of money into a company. Or right. borrowing tons of money and buying a business with borrowed money, which is what everybody else recommends to do, is leverage buyouts. And of course, you know, I always describe leverage buyouts as you're taking your forward cash flow, because you have to pay this back over, you know, the next 5-10 years. So it's your forward cash flow. You're taking your forward cash flow, you're guaranteeing it personally, and it's the most volatile asset class known to man, a small business, you know. So you're effectively guaranteeing this incredibly volatile asset. You're taking all of your forward cash flow and you're giving it to your star employee so they can leave. So, and all of those things together are quite a toxic mix. So you need to structure a deal that works better for you, you know, retain some of the value that that person brings to the party, or at least shares the risk with that person. Mm-hmm. And I think, that's, you know, what I always look at in those circumstances. So protect your downside and you only leave room for upside.
Right. So I would love to hear what people can learn from your new book, which is called Go Do Deals.
Yep.
And apparently that's releasing in December, just in a couple of weeks, it sounds like. So can you give us a little peek into what we'd learn?
Yeah. So like I was saying, I was always frustrated with the fact that business books out there, basically, we're all about sales, marketing, leadership, you know, the typical things. And I was running a business that was already quite successful, and we'd done some acquisitions. And I really wanted a book that was a now what book. Okay, I've built a business. Okay, I know how to get customers. Maybe I could scale a bit quicker, but, you know, what next? What's the next big thing that I can start to think about in the business? And what I realized is the next big thing is creating shareholder value and growing business mm-hmm. through acquisition. And so that's really what the book is about. It's about how do you identify targets that you can acquire and some outreach strategies that you can use to speak directly to those business owners. Then how you meet with them and how you position a transaction so you can actually get a deal done. It then gives some examples, some practical examples of actual deal structures that you can use to acquire businesses without borrowing money from banks and without putting your own cash in. Mm-hmm. Then some quick fixes you can use to add value to the business. And then also the exit, because as I said at the beginning of this interview, you make money when you sell, not when you run a business. Right. So how do you, you know, how do you do that? How do you create these capital events that give you that real financial freedom from entrepreneurship? So mm-hmm. yeah,
actually,
it's very much a practical guide.
I would love for you, because we haven't talked at all about identifying someone who could buy from you. Do you want to touch on that at all, what your process might be to find them as well, besides buying?
Yeah. So, I mean, again, this is another area where most people just jump straight to the brokers, but actually having all your information up together is really important. So mm-hmm. having, you know, really good like virtual data room with all of the, you know, all of the right information in there, having a good information memorandum and a good executive summary that you can use. And then advertising, you know, bizbuysell.com over in the US, businessesforsale.com in the rest of the world, mm-hmm. Advertising the business for sale, looking for, you know, potential buyers that way works. My personal favorite is obviously consolidation. So put many of them together. If you can get to, you know, 10 million and up of EBIT, of earnings before interest and tax, mm-hmm. you open the door to a lot of private equity and other more serious buyers. So, you know, consolidation plays are a great way of getting, widening the audience of potential buyers. A really good tip is to arrange finance for the buyer. Like I say, when you're buying a business, it's a dumb idea to borrow money, but you absolutely want the person buying from you to off their house. So pre-arranging finance to acquire your company is quite a good plan as well, so that you can help oil the wheels. And in fact, I give a really clever strategy around that in the book Go Do Deals, about how you can create that that financing structure for the eventual buyer in a really clever way.
And so we've talked a little bit about if you're looking for opportunities to buy, and also, you know, when you're ready to divest of the business and sell it. But what about actual mergers? How do you know if you should merge with a business?
Yeah, so look, there's a number of reasons why you should merge. I think most people are obsessed with synergies. So they're just mm-hmm. obsessed with, well, we've got two bookkeepers and we've got two offices and we could have one bookkeeper and we could have one office. Actually, a merger happens at the shareholder level. So mm-hmm. forget about the operations. Think about just the shareholder merger. Well, if you put all of the shares into one holding company, that holding company is now the sum of the two parts. So your two $2 million companies are now one $4 million company. Well, one $4 million company is easier to sell than a $2 million company, and it has an incrementally higher value than two $2 million companies. And so actually a lot of the shareholder value is created through the scale rather than all of the synergies that you'll find. In fact, what you might find is that you can mess around for 12 months trying to get those synergies and cause as many problems as you solve, and be 12 months older. Whereas in fact, you probably could have sold it the day of the merger with the idea of doing the synergies to the person that you sell it to. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes selling the dream is worth more than selling the actuality. The other great thing about mergers is you can use them to succession plan. So if you're somebody that's kind of stuck in your business running it on a day-to-day basis, when you merge, you can get them to run your business and their business. It's, you know, whenever you do mergers, it's all about egos. Everybody wants to be in the driving seat. So let them be in the driving seat, because when you sell a business, the guy in the driving seat gets stuck in the driving seat. And so if you can extract yourself and you can be non-executive, then it's a great, you know, you can go and sell the business with them in it. And yeah, that can be a really powerful succession planning method.
So we talked just a tiny bit about your book. So I assume that's something you might want to offer. I don't know if you have anything else you might want to offer our listeners, but I would love for you to share anything that you have for the listener.
Yeah, so we've got a really great thing I can offer, actually, which the book is called Go Do Deals. And we actually managed to get the website godo.deals. So like instead of .com, it's .deals. So godo.deals. If you go to godo.deals and you order the book, if you order it now, it'll be delivered when it comes out on the 8th of December, or it'll just become a place you can buy the book from later on. But you'll get the hard copy first edition version if you order it from there. But because it's, you know, you've got to wait a week or 2 weeks or whatever it is to get it, we're actually going to give you a 21-day email course, which basically takes you through all of the stuff that I've been talking about. And it includes videos and an email text, and you'll get a different email. You'll get an email every day for the next 21 days that will take you through that process of sourcing, acquiring, and turning around and selling businesses. And we actually developed the course before COVID. We put this course together. We spent a lot of time making it a really cool 21-day course, but we hadn't really decided what we were going to do with it, whether we were going to sell it or whatever. And then obviously COVID came out and the book was coming out. So we decided to do this very special offer for your listeners, so they can get it with a pre-order of the book.
Fabulous. And you mentioned, you know, the hardcover book, or, you know, the hard copy book would ship, and that ships internationally?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Okay.
So, and it's a US publisher, actually. So I think most of the audience is US.
Okay. Yeah, yes. So. Most of them are. We do have people that listen in other countries, but yes, we're mostly US based. So, but if someone is listening in another country too, they can order it. Or do you have like a download version too?
I'm sure there will be. I think it comes out on Kindle shortly afterwards, but
perfect. So how can our listeners contact you if they have additional questions?
Reach out on social media. I'm on Instagram as harbor.jeremy. I'm on Twitter, Jeremy J Harbor. LinkedIn, all the usual. We're called the Harbor Club on YouTube, if you want to watch loads of videos about all the stuff I've been talking about, basically wealth, buying businesses, selling businesses, turnarounds, all of that sort of stuff. We post I really hate watching long YouTube videos, so I have these really punchy short videos on YouTube.
So because of how you spell your last name too, which might be different than how US citizens here think about it, why don't you spell your last name so they could find you?
Yeah, it's Jeremy is obviously J-E-R-E-M-Y, and my surname is H-A-R-B-O-U-R. So H-A-R-B-O-U-R. We stick that extra U in there because, well, it's our language. I'm English, so.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I just want to make sure people are spelling it, because I know if it's here in the U.S., they're probably going to spell it differently. So, but this has been great. And it's just tipping the iceberg, I'm sure. Just, you know, that's that tiny little bit. You've got a lot of content. I'm sure that book will really be helpful too. But I'm so glad that you were able to, you know, join me to discuss this topic today. So thank you so much.
No, thank you so much for having me, and have a great Thanksgiving.
You too. I do want to also thank the listeners for tuning in today. I hope you found this topic interesting and that it answered some questions about mergers and acquisitions for the small business owner. If you have any additional questions or comments, be sure to reach out to Jeremy at any of the links that he shared, or you can send us a message at media@abandp.com. And would you please share our information with those you know? I'd greatly appreciate your supporting our show. Next week's topic is being a legally savvy business owner. I hope you can join us for this presentation. And please remember, you can connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And my website is abandp.com. Remember to tune in each Tuesday to hear an important topic that we'll be sharing with you to help you with your success. And again, you can find those podcasts posted on YouTube, Facebook, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio and Spotify. Until next time, have a great week.
Thank you for listening to This Help For You. Please join your host, Candy Messer, again next Tuesday. Have a terrific week.